This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 19th of October, 2022. Really interesting to see how we extended higher in yesterday's session. So that big bounce off the lows, recent lows in the U.S. equity market, that followed through very solidly into very early hours of the cash session yesterday in the U.S. And then we rolled over pretty badly, so closing the day with only very small gains, so it looked a bit bearish. But then after hours, this big Netflix news that we'll talk about in a moment, Peter, helping to boost sentiment once again. But I think as we've talked about on two internal calls we've had this morning before recording this podcast, it's really pretty simple. We have that U.S. 10-year at the highs of the cycle here. And in fact, you just gave me a heads up before we started the podcast. It just hit a new cycle high at 4.08%. As long as that's the case, you really have a hard time getting too excited about the potential for a bear market squeeze here. For me to get excited about that, I'd have to have some kind of indication on the yields softening up here. But take us through your take and on what's going on here.
Yeah, we have talked a little bit about it, John, in the past couple of podcasts. A lot of noise. It started last week with the inflation report, and as we highlighted, the price action was quite weird. A lot of talks about derivatives. Were there a lot of hedging contracts out there in the market that had to be squared? The weirdness continued on Friday, and then this week as well. I mean, and you mentioned in our internal call, you know, a lot of volatility, a lot of big moves actually, and I don't put too much weight on what's happening right now because it just doesn't really feel right. Coming back a little bit this morning in the S&P 500, as you also show on slide two with your chart there, John, I think it is that 10-year yield that will drive price action going forward. Then, and of course, in combination with earnings, and we'll talk about that. I've put up the 1 week performance across our theme baskets just to show you that it has been how volatile the actually has been, especially in the tail of some of these equity themes. I mean, e-commerce and cybersecurity, pretty hefty returns there, and China's little giants, as they're called. Part of this small cap segment, which is part of the technology complex, up almost 10%. So big moves. And I think before you want to talk about the energy, but I just quickly, because one of the things that are happening in the equity market, of course, is all these earnings. And on slide four, I just have a very quick overview on the current status on the Q3 earnings season. And you can see that the earnings per share in dollar terms, quarter on quarter, is actually negative right now for the MSCI World Index, but also the S&P 500 and NASDAQ 100. I have to reiterate, of course, it is early days here, but we will be monitoring how margins and things are developing. But I will talk more about it later in the podcast because we had a lot of earnings releases coming yesterday. Sorry.
Yeah, a lot of interesting things in those earnings, Johnson & Johnson, Netflix, otherwise. But yeah, I just want to briefly mention energy because there are a lot of moving parts here and a lot of cross currents as well. So we have a situation now in Europe, for example, with the natural gas, with such mild weather, with the storage having been topped up so thoroughly and a mad dash and scramble to ensure that this cutoff of Russian supplies was not going to impact the prospects for heating this winter. Now we have LNG ships arriving from the U.S., and maybe there's not many places for this natural gas to be placed when you have demand so much lower because of mild weather here. So we could have the spot natural gas prices just continuing to collapse. This has absolutely nothing to do about the longer-term strategic questions around Europe's entire industrial model, et cetera. But I just find it remarkable. And there's a big read in the FT today, as I highlight on slide three, talking about whether this energy crisis will crush European industry. Certainly, Europe is going to need to change its ways to avoid that fate. But elsewhere, we still have a crunch in distillates. So diesel fuel and diesel prices are very high. They're coming back much higher in the U.S. again. Very long-term chart I have there on slide three, the one sort of in the background on the left. You can see we're back above, well above $5 per gallon for the retail level. And, you know, Biden's attempt to sort of stave off high fuel prices ahead of the midterm elections, as you can see on the strategic petroleum reserve draws there on that lower right chart, just an absolute stunning development there, will not affect diesel prices when you have so much diesel being shipped off to Europe to alleviate the even worse supply crunch here. U.S. distillate, so diesel Inventories are at the record lows. It's just a very interesting situation, and there are just so many moving parts that it needs to be highlighted. So even though natural gas is hitting new lows here, in a local sense, we have other parts of this complex that are showing some red flashing signs here. And Biden, by the way, we saw crude oil prices a bit lower, talking about another 15 million barrels to be released from the strategic reserve. We're getting on the edge of this reserve not even being strategic anymore. It's really remarkable stuff. And just look back at 2008 when you had those record prices at the time hitting close to $150 per barrel. You didn't even really see much of it. You saw a very tiny draw there. Just the behavior difference when prices are actually around the same of what they were and actually far lower in inflation adjusted terms in the whole high price period from 2011 to 2014. The excuse being, of course, a war in Ukraine, et cetera, but it's going to have long-term consequences. All right, and we talked about higher U.S. yields, and that is being no big surprise there, reflected with the most pressure in the FX market on dollar yen, trading well above 149. Nothing new in the rhetoric from the Bank of Japan overnight. A governor out speaking in favor of the negative policy and yield curve control, saying that inflation will come down next year. Kuroda saying we don't mind yen weakness, we just don't like instability. There's just no sign of them blinking. And as long as these US yields continue to pressure, we're going to see dollar yen pressuring higher until we reach whatever level they're going to intervene. And it will be futile intervention beyond a, 2 to 3 to 1 week, a 2 to 3 day to 1 week period, as long as yields continue higher. So maybe 150 plus triggers that next batch of bout of volatility if they do intervene. But the story remains the same there. And then highlighting on slide five, the dollar renminbi. So we're it just interesting this morning as the dollar was not really that much stronger than where it had been yesterday. But in general, on the weekend of the last week's range, not including dollar yen, but looking at the dollar versus other major currencies. And yet dollar renminbi is pinned here close to the highs and looks like it wants to head higher still. So that suggests that you're looking at an isolated renminbi weakening move. So we need to track that and the scale of that as a potential sign that China is exporting deflation to the world and is changing its stance on its policy. All right, I want to get back over to the stock situation and earnings situation, Peter, because we had a couple of interesting stories. I alluded to that Netflix report after the close yesterday as boosting sentiment. Not that Netflix should be considered a bellwether for the broader market, but of course, this was a company that's been under such pressure. So their upside surprise had a really exaggerated effect on the share price there. So take us through that and what else you're focusing on today.
Yeah, I admit I've been part of the negative crowd around Netflix for quite some time. I think the content creation has been worsening. Internal culture battles, etc., and these headwinds coming out of the pent up demand, or in a pent up demand, but the very strong demand during the lockdown. But they Netflix surprised, and I think on subscribers for subscriber growth of Q3, and also the forecast for Q4 was better than expected. I think it's quite impressive given the price hikes that they have put out there, and also the squeeze to some extent we're seeing on consumers from high energy and food bills. And share price were up 15%. I've put in here on slide six the quarterly operating income, so EBITDA, coming down. It's not as strong as it was back in 2021, so it's down year and year, down quarter and quarter. But still, if you look at it, Netflix is still a business that is generating three times as much operating profit as it did on average back in 2008 and early 2019. So it's a company that is growing and it's becoming stronger and stronger. And I think they one of the things they talked about was that more sports content will come to the platform. They are also engaging in gaming because of their more than 230 million subscribers, and they're working on a advertising model, what they call a linear advertising, so that's tied to where you don't target specifically key segments like you do on the Facebook platform, so it's much more linearly. And what they're saying is that the demand for their advertising capacity is quite high. I think it's an interesting growth leg that could really maybe be a differentiator for Netflix share price next year. The three other stocks to watch today, I will highlight only one because otherwise I can talk forever, but that's ASML, the world's largest semiconductor equipment maker of these lithography machines that you use to cut the channels where the electrons are running through in these computer chips, very sophisticated equipment. They have a 70% market share. They surprised to the upside on Q3 revenue and growth margin, but the growth margin forecast for Q4 was actually worse than expected. And I think the most important thing they also said was that they are seeing, with the current assessment, a minimal impact from these US export bans. So as long as the equipment is produced in the Netherlands, it can be exported without any violation on the from these export bans. So that I think is an interesting take, because I don't think it's the intention of the US export bans. So I think that's something we will have to I think it's a downside risk, at least for next year, that ASML is too rosy on that.
Yeah, you mentioned that as well. You don't have it on your slide there, but Johnson & Johnson was interesting. Their revenue top line growth was only plus 1.9%. But I was surprised to look at this, to my mind, a very American company, but they're super international, about half-half in terms of their revenues stateside versus the rest of the world. And so I imagine some of that top line sluggishness has to do with the vastly stronger dollar relative to where it was a year ago. But it is disappointing when in this age of inflation to see just a basic, what is in many cases, a lot of their portfolios, basic stuff, consumer stuff, to not see a higher top line growth.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the strong dollar is, and it will continue to impact the company. They will see a 6-7% FX headwind on their earnings per share next year. So, and we talked about it internally. It is a little bit odd, because a lot of these companies are really good at hedging at least half of the FX volatility. But apparently, for Johnson & Johnson, maybe they just have a different take on it. But yeah, and as you said, 8% inflation and 2% revenue growth, it's not in real terms a very pleasant result. On slide 7 to the earnings calendar, so we're looking ahead in Europe for Atlas Copco. It's a very large Swedish industrial company. It's a 13 billion euro-ish industrial company, so pretty sizable. They're expecting revenue growth of 26%. So we're looking for that. And then Procter & Gamble, very, very key consumer company with a lot of things, from everything from diapers to what have you. You know that better than me, John, having lived in the States, but of course they also sell here in Europe. And then the big one, of course, is Tesla. So Tesla is a fascinating company in the sense that it's still holding up pretty well against the rest of the indices, I think. Although the stock price has come down substantially over the past couple of weeks, prior to that it had done pretty well. And what I'm looking for in this earnings release today is that, to what extent are supply chains, but also availability of lithium, a key constraint because of the rising input costs and the cost on batteries, and whether they will be forced to hike prices even more to preserve their margins. That's one thing. And then these electricity prices that we have talked so much about, now they have come down in the UK yesterday. They hit the 20-year average, so it is stabilizing and improving in some countries and areas in Europe. But to what extent has this uncertainty and volatility in electricity prices, because that's also one thing, is with just what the current price is, but the fact that you had the spike in electricity prices could cause consumers to wonder, could it happen again? Is it a good solution, etc.? And I'm just curious to see what their demand profile looks like under this current environment, because we know they missed on their Q3 delivery. So a very interesting report, and they will report after the US market close.
Yeah, such a bellwether stock, just in terms of the marginal retail trade, the most popular and heavily traded stock in the world. We have to definitely watch for that and the impact on broader sentiment across markets. So that brings us to the macro calendar. There are so many items there on slide 8. I won't run through them all. A few Fed speakers out. I sincerely doubt we'll see a change of tune from them. The Beige Book it can be interesting for little anecdotal reports about what the Fed is seeing in the various regions when they interview various participants in the economy. There's a 20-year T-note auction as well today. Interesting, given we're here at these cycle highs, at least in the 10-year yield, and the latest inventory and product data for crude oil and products from the DOE, so the sort of the energy supply side of things very interesting as well. The NAHB, so that most leading of U.S. housing indicators, hitting a new low for this cycle at 38. That was far worse than the 43 expected, and the big 8-point drop from the prior month really, you know, showing that this U.S. housing market is headed for a tremendous correction. Prices are very slow to follow, but they do follow what is going on with the activity. So we'll watch for that. There is the housing starts and building permits up today for September. That NAHB number, by the way, was already for October, as it is survey-based. Then we have a Australian employment jobs report up overnight. Watch for that. And the Japanese national CPI, interesting, up on Friday. They're willing to look through these hotter inflation numbers for now. Again, next month's October data could be interesting because of at least one story I read suggesting that there will be a major upward adjustment in food prices as food wholesalers are looked to adjust their prices at the beginning of this month. And then we need to start warming up our thoughts on the various central banks. Coming up, we have the ECB next week, and then the following week, the FOMC and the Bank of England. The latter expected at 100 basis points now. That has actually come down because of the stability in the UK gilt market, and to some degree in the currency as well. I think they're going to at least need to deliver that. And by the way, I think it'll be interesting just for the political watchers out there. There's PMQs today, so Prime Minister questions in UK Parliament with Liz Truss today, who could be on her way out, obviously, as the UK's Prime Minister. But just to see how that goes down, it's becoming quite a spectator sport, UK politics at this point in time. All right, so yeah. Keep your eye on those yield charts, interesting times, and we'll see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.